We're having the biggest conversations in Abuja right now. Join the talk on 95.1 Nigeria Info, Abuja. Let's talk. Let's talk.
From your number one talk news and sports station. This is the Morning Crossfire
with Femi D Live.
This is Nigeria Info 95.1. Thank you so much for joining in on Morning Crossfire. It's 8:18 a.m. Nigerian time. There's much to cover. What is the future of Nigeria's elections when you think about the journey towards tweaking it, towards amending the laws that pretty much frame it up day by day? And also, you also start to wonder about the interpretation of those laws and what laws may be missing in action, and the ones that are not missing in action, are they being applied? The recent times, the Electoral Amendment Bill did take center stage of many conversations, and one wonders the level of discussions as one would have around the 2023 elections, and they pretty much hope that Nigerians are saying that elections may bring about some of the things they are looking forward to in achieving in the democracy. Joining me now is Professor Kingsley Moalu. Is a politician, former central banker, academic, and former United Nations official. He's also a philanthropist and change maker. He's also the presidential candidate, was a presidential candidate in 2019, and in recent times declared he will be preparing for the 2023 elections. He believes strongly that a vision for Nigeria to create prosperity for 200 million people and build a nation where different groups of people can stand side by side in achieving and building democracy. Thank you so much, Professor Moalu, for joining in on the show this morning. Welcome to Morning Crossfire.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start off by talking about the 2019 elections and some of the issues that built up from there, and the need to address the issues that one would say are lessons learned, and now that we're amending the electoral laws. Because just before the 2019 elections, there were talks about amending the Electoral Amendment Bill, but it was too close to the election, according to the executive arm of government, to go into that amendment. And now that 2023 supposedly is 2 years away, one would wonder about the lessons learned in the last 2 years from the off-cycle elections, and now the elections are forthcoming. Why amend the electoral bill as we have it now? What are some of the reasons one should be interested in amending such a bill?
Well, the most important reason to amend the bill is that there is no confidence amongst Nigerians in the Electoral Act in terms of the ability for election results to be transmitted in a transparent way. So people do not believe that as the laws stand right now, that you can have clean elections. And we have seen this a lot, including in the 2019 elections, where electoral observers criticized very heavily the conduct of those elections as being very poor in quality, and in fact worse than the elections in 2015. So there is no confidence in Nigeria's electoral framework. And one of the consequences of this, not to vote, you know, and that is not good for our democracy, where you have 84 million people registered and only 28 million people voted, as we saw in 2019. So an attempt to correct this in terms of creating an electronic framework for the elections, the executive, you know, the president refused to assent to the bill on the basis, in his view, that it was too close to the elections. Well, now we are 2 years away from elections, and so we're trying to do the right thing. But you find that even now, 2 years to the elections, we still have similar problems. Vested interests that do not want free and fair elections in this country.
The phrase free and fair have often, you know, been used when it comes to elections around a lot of democratic countries around the world. But, you know, one of the things that's been argued about now is if there's going to be a fair election, the laws that allow the fairness to even take place need to be observed. Let's take a look at some of the points of the amendment. The electronic transmission, the argument is about how do you subject INEC, a body supposedly that starts with the word independent, and well, the biggest result of what they need to do would now need to be collaborated or even be subjected to another government parastatal. Why are you concerned about that? Because one would wonder, I mean, INEC after all needs partners to get things done. Do you agree that INEC is in a tough fix now when it comes to elections? Because INEC, on the other hand, say, we have what it takes to run elections. We've been doing transmission of results. We can do that without so much subjecting it into so much theatrics, as one would put it.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, INEC needs to be truly independent in fact, not just in name. That is why many people in the country are upset that the Senate tried to interfere with that independence by including provisions that NCC, the Nigerian Communications Commission, and the National Assembly itself have to certify the ability of INEC to do electronic transmission of results based on, you know, what they call the coverage of, you know, network coverage. But INEC itself has told us that this is not a problem at all. So why would you be inserting, you know, clauses in a law concerning a constitutionally mandated body to do its job? You are trying to gag INEC, that's what it is. You are trying to find a loophole to still rig elections. Regardless of what anybody's saying, we're not children, we know what is at stake. Electronic transmission of results would drastically reduce rigging of elections in this country and give more people confidence to participate in our democracy. It makes it more and more a democracy in name and in reality. That is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. But what we have with this bill that the Senate is trying to pass, assuming it is what becomes the final law, because there still has to be harmonization between what the Senate did and what the House of Representatives did. And the House did not do what the Senate did. The House version essentially leaves INEC to determine how to transmit results. So if what the Senate is trying to do is what happens, then what it means is that we have a government of politicians, by politicians, for politicians. The people have no business in this whole arrangement. It's just politicians creating avenues to continue to perpetuate themselves in power. And that's wrong. It should not stand. It's unconstitutional and it should not stand.
The NCC was invited in to even provide perspective to this an election. And they talked about the different levels of network connections we have in Nigeria, 2G, 3G. I said if you have 3G anywhere else, you may as well have 4G. But they also moderately said they cannot guarantee that transmission of election results would go over that platform easily. And in other words, they rated it in about 3G being 50%. It also means about 50% of the 50% of the number of voters we have in Nigeria may be stepping forward to having their results transmitted. Don't you see or do you perceive litigation coming up from issues such as this? Because even the clauses being argued about is put under conditionality to say, in the event, in case, suppose. I mean, these are things that when they get to law courts become quite substance of argument.
The legal framework is very clear. The legal framework is the Constitution, and you know, which sets up INEC and gives it functions, including the constitutionally mandated ability to determine conditions for elections. So any law that runs contrary to this is an unconstitutional law. And therefore, of course, I foresee litigation. And I believe that if such litigation occurs, if this law remains this way the Senate wants it, I believe it should not stand, period, because it's unconstitutional. Should we allow unconstitutional things to be happening in this republic? My answer is no. So all this technical argument about bringing NCC is not an electoral body. INEC is a complete body for the conduct of elections, period. And it knows its job, or should know its job. It has not always performed well. We are trying to see that INEC itself improves its game. And INEC itself, at this point, seems interested in improving its work. And they are telling us with examples that they can do electronic transmission of results anywhere in Nigeria. There are all sorts of technologies that make that possible. So going to bring the NCC is simply a red herring, in my view. There's no question about it. And then including that INEC, that NACS itself, the National Assembly, should also certify. How can you be a referee in a match in which you are also a player? That's just unbelievable. It's only in Nigeria could this sort of thing happen.
Let's talk about another part of the amendment, which essentially talks about the amount of money the different politicians can spend in an election. One of the things you've always been keen about is that the people should actually follow people who can deliver on the quality of what they promise, essentially, which is, we need education, we need to get people out of poverty and the likes of that. But we're seeing spending on election from the president all the way down to the governors and all the other different positions, elected positions, the increase that is now allowed in their spending quota, even though there's always been a question about if INEC could ever follow up with questions on, how much did you spend? You've broken one of our rules and regulations. That has never really been done. Are you also concerned about the amount we invest, or should I not invest now? The amount we spend on elections in Nigeria, it keeps growing. It doesn't seem to be abating in its growth at all.
Well, yes. I mean, Nigeria's politics is very money-driven and unreasonably so. You always need money to contest elections. That's the fact anywhere in the world, even for legitimate purposes. If you want to buy advertisements, you have to pay. Logistics, you have to pay. Print posters, you have to pay. So there is money involved in being a candidate. Let's not deceive ourselves. And the levels prescribed in the Electoral Act before, which was like 1 billion for the presidency, looked so unrealistic based on what we know actually happens. So I suspect that the members of the National Assembly have tried to bring the spending limits. By the way, they said no more than so. You can spend less. You don't have to spend 15 billion for the presidency. You can spend 5 billion and win. But yes, you can say 15 billion is rather a lot. Maybe they could have gone to 10, but these are just arguments about, like they said, they didn't mandate that you must spend that amount of money. It's simply a limit, that recognizes the reality that there's a lot of money in Nigerian politics. Nigeria is a big country. And if you want to run for office, especially nationwide office, it's very, very challenging. I can tell you that from my experience in 2019. It's neither here nor there, that particular aspect of it. Although you can say they are giving a leeway to politicians to spend ill-gotten wealth by increasing the amounts to such high figures. So this is what I would see from it. But we also have to understand that elections are not cheap.
Yeah, definitely not cheap in Nigeria. You're also the president of Institute for Governance and Economic Transformation. And I just want to ask you, based on their position, you also, of course, attended London School of Economics and your profile extends across the political landscape, especially on governance. Let's talk about the electorate for a moment. There's been a lot of talks about the electorate knowing what they're looking for in a candidate that would be appear in the 2023 elections. There's been talk about, young enough, possibly a technocrat, somebody is in touch with the common man, somebody as well who is in touch with the international community, somebody who's able to navigate many, many waters, and at the same time, a politician with extensive resources. What do you think the electorates, people who are listening right now, who will be looking out for certain attributes of who they should be voting for? What should we be looking out for?
Well, for any level of electoral candidacy, whether it's presidency or local government council, I think that Nigerian voters should, first of all, look at the character of a man or a woman seeking office. It's important to look at the character. It's important to look at the competence of the person. It's important to look at the person's capacity to do the job. The three C's are very important. Now, specifically, for the presidency, for example, we need to be more educated about what a president actually does. A president has four functions. The first is nation building, to build a nation. That is to say, to manage the diversity of this very big country of many diverse ethnic groups and religions, and build it into a nation, not just a country. So the unity of Nigeria is an important function for the president to be able to preserve. So nation building also includes building institutions, independent and effective institutions. So that's the first part, nation building, managing Nigeria's diversity and the ability to build institutions. The second part is the economy. The national economy of Nigeria is the responsibility of the president. No question about that. We have seen that Nigeria, in terms of nation building, has become much more divided in the last few years. So we're failing in building a nation. And increasingly, there is more talk about whether or not the country itself can survive as an entity. The economy has gone south, gone very bad. Poverty has increased massively in this country over the last several years. The third issue is security, national security. You know, the security of the lives and property of Nigerians. Again, we see that this is in a horrible situation today with a lot of terrorism. Our lives are beset by terrorism, kidnappers, bandits. All of these people are all terrorists. Let's call them what they are, truly. Then you have the fourth responsibility of the president, which is international relations. So many Nigerians do not understand that these four things are what they should be looking for in anybody running for president. Do you have experience and a track record with managing diversity? Have you run an institution that has different ethnic groups in it? I, for example, have been deputy governor of the Central Bank of Nigeria, which is a major national institution. I have worked for the United Nations for 17 years with colleagues from 200 countries of the world. So managing diversity is second nature to me. I have led teams that rebuild broken nations suffering from the kind of challenges Nigeria faces today in countries like Angola, Cambodia, Rwanda, Croatia. So I have that experience. I have the experience of international security operations in an international context that have involved intelligence across borders in various countries. I have had experience in managing the Nigerian economy as a deputy governor of the Central Bank. And I have experience in international relations as a former United Nations diplomat. But you find in Nigeria that many people think, oh, what you need to become a president is to be a governor of a state. These four functions I have given you are not the job of a state governor. So this is one of the reasons why we don't make the right voting decisions, because we don't even realize what the functions of the office we're looking for are. And so we find, for example, the political class of governors and so on. Of course, anybody's in, you know, has the right to vie for any office. We're talking about preparation. We're talking about qualifications. That's what we should be looking at. And sometimes we get it wrong when we see, for example, governors or senators feeling that they have a natural right to the presidency, and people are not looking for people who have more technocratic credentials, because it's about leadership. What we have in Nigeria today is politics without leadership. We have politics without governance. And that's why our country is suffering today. We need to go beyond just successful politics and politicians to look for people who can actually govern this country to prosperity and to security. That's what we should be looking at. So we need a lot more voter education about these issues. And you know, one of the lessons we saw from 2019, and you see this also, that a lot of voters in the national context, they are wedded to the APC or the PDP, but there are several other parties. So what you find is that millions of Nigerians have loyalty to political parties, but it doesn't matter what candidates those parties present. So for example, if the APC presents a chimpanzee and the PDP presents a donkey, people will vote because of those parties. No, this is why this country is not working. You should vote for individuals before party. Find the candidate you like and you think that that candidate has the capacity, the character, the competence for the job. Then you ask, what is your party? Then you vote for that party. In voting for that party, you're voting for the candidate. But if you don't consider the candidates and all you say is, I'm loyal to APC or PDP, you will not get good governance. Because parties, political parties in Nigeria today are not mature enough, either in their internal democracy or in their ideology, to assure you of good governance. So you should look more at individuals. And I hope that in 2023, this is what we will do.
Let me push you on this because we're pressed for time, but I would like to ask you about this. The debt quota of Nigeria. I mean, I recently there was talks about the fact that, oh, well, we can increase our debt portfolio a little bit further down. We have the capacity to match it. And somebody said to me, said, who exactly will be paying all this money if peradventure, the leading party right now is not even around, or anybody around at that time will be paying up for all this money. And Nigeria seems not to be jump-starting off on the edge of being profitable in so many other sectors of the country. The quota in which we are, our debt is right now, are you concerned about this?
I am very deeply concerned. I'm not just concerned, I am alarmed about the future of my children in Nigeria. The future of the youth of this country has been mortgaged by the reckless borrowing of this government that has been in office for the past 6 years. And it's going to have horrible consequences for this country, because who's going to pay? Many of these debts are being pushed to 2023, when they presumably will no longer be around. So basically, a trap is being set for the future leaders of this country. This is one of the consequences of voting for people who do not have capacity and competence. Managing an economy, I have told you now, is a very important job of the president of Nigeria. In America and many other countries, it is the most important basis on which people vote. You see, so can you create jobs? Do young people have skills? You know, are people hungry? There are 100 million Nigerians today living in extreme poverty. They earn less than $2 a day, and this is increasing. In 2016, there were 17 million people in extreme poverty. Today, in 2021, there are 100 million. So 30 million people have descended into extreme poverty in this country. And we are borrowing just to pay salaries. We are borrowing for all sorts of reasons. It shows that our economic management is weak. And the question is, who will pay? It is the youth of this country whose future, we say, the future belongs to them. But the future that is being left behind for them with this kind of borrowing going on is a future in which they will be strangulated by debts. Now, do you know that out of every 1 naira the Nigerian government earns today in revenue, more than 90 kobo of it goes to servicing the interest on debt, not paying back the full debt, but in servicing the interest. Can you imagine what this means? So what this means is that the economic management of the country is not competent. It is lazy. We are resorting to borrowing because it's an easier thing to do. Some people will tell you, oh, we still have more room to borrow based on the debt to GDP ratio, the ratio of our debt to our GDP. That is nonsense. What matters, especially for a country of Nigeria, is the ratio of debt servicing to your revenue. What you're earning, how much of it are you using to govern? How much of it are you using to invest in education and healthcare? And how much are you using to service your debt? If all of what you earn, you're using to pay back people you're owing, and you have very little money to build good hospitals for the people, to equip our schools, to make investments in the kinds of things that will change the quality of life of Nigerians, then you have failed in the constitutional duty to provide for the welfare of Nigerians. You say you're borrowing for infrastructure. Let me tell you that that is just nonsense. A lot of this infrastructure that is being borrowed for does not provide revenues that can service the debt. In every other country of the world, that's what is done. You cannot borrow for what cannot pay its way. Abi?
Yeah, well, that's the reasonable way to think about it.
Yes, that's the reasonable way to look at it. If you're borrowing for a railway, then you must have done an economic calculation that over a number of years, that money will be returned by the fees that people are paying. That's not what's happening in Nigeria today. So we just keep borrowing and borrowing and borrowing for things that are not sustainable. A lot of these projects can be done by public-private partnership. Major roads, major railways, private sector investors, if they have confidence in the Nigerian economy, can come in and undertake those projects and take the profits for, say, 20 years or 25 years. And when they've made a certain level of profit from their investment, they hand over the project back to the government. This is the smart way to go. And also take note that many of the costs of these projects are massively inflated compared to what is happening in other countries like Ghana or Ethiopia. So you again begin to worry. Now, there are two visions of the future. Benjamin Disraeli, a former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, said, "The youth are the guarantors of a country's posterity. The future belongs to the young people. The young shall grow and the old shall die. It's a biological fact. So the future belongs to the youth." But listen to what Herbert Hoover, a former American president, said sarcastically. He said, "Blessed are the youth, for they shall inherit the national debt." That's what seems to be the future of Nigeria's youth. They are blessed because they will inherit all this $33 billion external debt that Nigeria has today, going from $10 billion when this administration came into office. So we're owing now more than three times more than we were owing. So it's a very bad situation. And again, it goes to 2023. What type of person will we be voting for president? You should be looking for people who can manage this situation and get us out of it, not based on, "Oh, I'm APC, oh, I'm PDP," and they will come and this whole thing will continue. It's sad.
Professor, I'm super pressed for time, but I can tell you, there's so much going through my mind. I still want to push you on just one question for us to round off now. The elections 2023 are coming along, but I'm also concerned about the issues of freedom of speech, civic space shrinking, the media laws, and all kinds of things. Bishop Kuka was in the U.S. To speak to representatives in recent times, and well, the presidency reacted to that and, you know, did put some aspersions on some of his points of view. Are you concerned as well about what you can say now and what you'll be able to say in the future?
Yes, it is a very difficult situation Nigeria is in, because the attitude of the government in power today seems to be, you know, you either put up and shut up, or else. That's what seems to be happening. You know, increasingly we see a tendency to restrict the freedom of expression in Nigeria, the freedom of assembly, freedom of association. These are all constitutionally guaranteed rights, and the business of the government should be to enforce those rights, not to take away from them. So, for example, you saw the Twitter ban. At first they said, "Oh, they were banning Twitter from Nigeria and banning Nigerians from using Twitter, and any Nigerian who uses Twitter will be prosecuted by the Attorney General." I immediately started using Twitter, and I said, "I'm waiting for the Attorney General to show up at my doorstep, because it's my constitutional right to free expression. You cannot ban it. I'm sorry." But many people were intimidated into this, you know? So of course I went and got a VPN, a virtual private network, and I tweet. And I continue to tweet, because it's an illegal thing to try to stop me from expressing myself on a social media platform. You cannot do that. You can negotiate with Twitter as a company about arrangements for them to operate in Nigeria, but you can never interfere with the right of Nigerians to use Twitter or any other medium of expression. Heck, Twitter banned the president of the United States, banned him. The heavens did not fall. That is a democracy. Here, they simply deleted a part of a tweet by the president, and the government got very angry. Come on, is this a democracy or is it a dictatorship? It's up to Nigerians to claim their future and assert their rights and vote for a certain type of leadership in 2023 that is a generational change, not this old type of, "Oh, I'm all powerful." No, we need a modern leader that can take Nigeria into the 21st century and lay the foundation for Nigeria to become like Dubai, like Israel, like Malaysia, Brazil. That's the vision that I have for this country. And that's why I will run for president the second time in 2023.
I want to say a big thank you to you now, Professor Kingsley Moalu, a politician, former central banker, academic, and former United Nations official. Yes, you did make your first attempt at a presidential post in 2019. We look forward to you doing the same in 2023, where some of your bold visions and issue-focused candidacy was a breath of fresh air. And yes, a lot of people credited you with the idea of Nigeria realizing that we don't need needless poverty and injustice that Nigerians may be expressing at a different point in time. Of course, much can be talked about your service to the country, career long, many years that you've also been part of different strata, different points of the development of the country thus far. Thank you so much, Professor Kingsley Moalu, for joining in on Morning Crossfire today.
Well, thank you for having me on the Crossfire.
Yes.
No bullets hit you.
Well, it's just because of time. I would love to bring you back as many times as possible on the show as your schedule opens up. It will really be a delight to actually have you on. We look forward to, even before the end of this quarter, to bring you in to speak even extensively more on other issues as we have it building up in the country. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. I'm happy to come back again if I am invited.
Certainly. Stay with us on Morning Crossfire. We'll be back after now.